Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. If you're not hiring for culture first, you're just temporarily patching a need. You're just checking a task off your list, and that is a losing proposition. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about culture is king. He's the CEO and founder of Read 5 Group, a boutique marketing agency specializing in custom tailored sophisticated solutions, organizational coaching, and fractional leadership services. He thrives in environments where transformational and turnaround leadership are pivotal to achieving unmatched and sustained growth, pushing intellectual boundaries to challenge groupthink, building environments where culture is king, and shaping the innovative sales and marketing infrastructures, methodologies, and programs that yield company, team, and client success. Eric Reed, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Sarah. I really appreciate that. That introduction sounded really nice. I appreciate that. It's nice to hear it sometimes.
Yeah, of course. Well, we're really excited to have you on the show today because, of course, you're an expert in the world of culture and building an effective culture. And we're going to dig in a little bit today into how that looks for building a sales team. So before we really dive into the technical stuff, Eric, I'd love to hear how you got where you are today and how you kind of built your expertise in that field.
Sure. Well, so I came up through media running sales and marketing teams. And I'm located in the Midwest, the United States, Cincinnati. But markets like Detroit, Chicago, LA, New York, they're what were called alternative publications, the Village Voice, LA Weekly, Detroit Metro Times, etc. So I kind of cut my teeth on building out sales and marketing teams in the what was called the alternative industry at the time. And what I learned in that industry, it was all about culture. That whole industry, it was about generating revenue. It was about a very viable, desired audience. But those publications had this kind of image that they weren't really viable for banks and for finance, for finance and for banks and for auto and all that kind of stuff. They were thought to be nightlife and those type of things. And also because of what the content of those publications was about, it really attracted really creative people, in my opinion, people who were good at sales, people who were good at marketing, people who were going to be good leaders, but they just didn't fit in that rigid structure of that was at the Gannett's of the world, the USA Today networks, et cetera. And so what I learned there, and I think I felt that way about life in general before working there, so I gravitated there. But I think really seeing the type of responsibility and the trust that we put in people doing a job because you do it because there was a good culture to do it, it really made me understand that it's not so much about finding people who can close and do all that, because everybody says they can, and certain people can, depending on the vertical. It's about finding a cultural fit. So not to go off on too much of a tangent, but that was a big part of me as I came up through media, say, hey, this is where people are connecting. This is what I want to be talking about. And so I took some of those principles as I went on to do some startups in the tech space, hosting and data centers with e-commerce websites. I just said Gannett and USA Today. I did actually go and kind of lead a division at Gannett for a while and USA Today Network. And then, you know, I've been in media for 10, 15 years, depending on what your definition of media is. And I just built a lot of relationships. I loved, you know, that whole industry was kind of losing its appeal to me. And I really liked sitting at the table and strategizing with clients. I had a lot of people that I networked with. A lot of people were struggling with this culture, the vision, the mission of their company. And I thought, you know, here's a place where I like to help and where I can help. And so that's what Read 5 Group is. And that's why it was founded 3 years ago. And that's what we do.
Awesome. Well, talk to me about culture in the sales context. That's kind of where a lot of our audience is living, and a lot of sales leaders, sales practitioners. So what does culture is king mean in the context of a sales team?
Well, first of all, let me put this out there, because I'd be remiss, and I don't want to seem like I'm talking about something that, and you know, stay with me on this because it's going to sound basic, but there's something here. You know, whether it's families, whether it's teams, sporting teams, whether it's dance groups, performance groups, there's a culture. You know, it's not just about a workplace. That's where we focus. That's where we earn our living. But there seems to be different rules for culture in the workplace. You know, families have not the same rigid culture. If they have three or four children that are a little bit different, they manage and raise and parent those children a little bit differently to fit their strengths and their skill sets and where they can develop. Same with a sports team. You know, you can't just cookie cutter is my point, but yet when we get into the sales world, we try to cookie cutter. We try to come up with this system. If we can just build this system, I can plug any sales rep in and they can do this. And while that looks good on paper, and while that might be a way that we wanted to go at one point, it's very dehumanizing, it's very robotic, and it's just not going to build a culture of ownership that you want on your team. So to answer your question on sales, for me, I think we have to understand, and again, there's so many different kinds of sales roles out there. There's, you know, enterprise, there's, you know, stuff you're selling for $300, $400, $500, the stuff you're selling for $100,000 with a 6 month to a 1 year sales cycle. So, you know, I don't want to say this is a one shoe fits all type thing. But at the end of the day, salespeople want to make money. I mean, because if they don't, I mean, that's why you go into that. And you might be passionate about the product, but you like to control your income. You want to be responsible for your actions. Most good salespeople, in my opinion, are managers who got burned out of managing everybody's number and just focusing on theirs because they understood how to do it. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to create a culture where, you know, it's equal and fair. That's paramount. How do you do that? You know, you want to reward your top performers, but it's not as easy as just one statement. It really is. The one key thing to keep in mind too is that your culture is created by the people who live in it. Far too often, we as leaders create the culture that we want, and that's a fail right there. You can't create a culture. It won't be a thriving culture if the people who live in it aren't contributing. Just look at the world that we, not to go there, but just look at the world we live in. And if you're not contributing to the rules of the culture, you're not going to be happy and flourishing in it.
Right. So how would a leader go about creating, of course, not creating all themselves, but creating a culture? Is it a case where they kind of set out, okay, these are values that I should be looking for, and then they hire accordingly? Or how would they go about building that?
Yeah. So the first thing is that a culture is what a culture is not. It's not jeans on Friday. It's not, you can take your child to the doctor. We have a ping pong table. We've got snacks and water cooler. Those are just being human. There's nothing to do with creating a culture. So when we get into the sales world and you're thinking, let's take a scenario of a new manager comes in to take over a sales team. They're hired because their sales are stagnant. They've got to revitalize it. First thing they're going to look at is their culture. And so the first thing to understand when you're trying to understand what the situation is with your culture is actually a temperature check. And obviously one-on-one meetings, and just talk about what works here, what doesn't work, what excites you, what motivates you, almost like a personality conversation. But the once you do that, the equally, I would say, if as important, if not important, is you should know what the value, vision, or mission statement of the company is. Obviously, you should know that before you walk in and manage people for the first day. Assuming the company you work for has one. I would also ask all those sales reps if they know what that is, because my guess is about 40% of them are going to know what it is. And of those 40, 20% will actually get it word for word. And that doesn't mean it's good, bad, or indifferent. It just means that's your first problem of a disconnection. You've put this time and energy into a cultural mission or a vision, and nobody understands what it is. And so how can they possibly be a part of that culture or agree with it if they don't even know how, you know, what the core definition of it is. So that would be my first thing that I would do to create it, is to make sure it's very clear what it is. If it's not, I mean, is it even something that works? Maybe it's got to be rethought. Maybe it's been sitting around for 15 years and it's not even, you know, relevant anymore. Basic things when you're building culture are paramount. They may not be exciting. They may not be things that we want to, you know, get all worked up over, saying, wow, this is earth shattering stuff. It's not. It's core. It's basic. It's fundamental. But your sales team cannot survive if these fundamentals aren't laid out.
Right. So what are some examples of those fundamentals?
Well, I think, you know, there is expectation on the number. Let's be very clear on this, is that when you're in sales, there's deliverables. One of the first rules that I put in place when we would work with sales reps for their annual budgets is you can't put a budget together that is based on what somebody above you wants to hear. The whole budget situation is a shell game. You know, let's be honest, you know, it is. It shouldn't be, but it seems to be a cat and mouse game of getting the number where you want it. And so if you have a sales team that is signing off or getting a number that they don't have any real belief or any say in, you know, that's a cultural problem right there. So a real, example of it is, if your budgets are not realistic, if in part of those candid conversations, and, you know, take it with a grain of salt, I suppose some people will say, that budget's too high, I can't hit it. I mean, you have to do your due diligence and figure it out. What's their, you know, what clients do they have? Are they getting a new territory? Are clients leaving? Have they lost significant revenue? Just because they lost $100,000 doesn't mean they can go out tomorrow and find $100,000. So we might want to budget it in there, but if they don't checked out for the rest of the sales period, whatever that measurement time is. So I would really go back and make sure the budgets are right. And it doesn't mean you have to go back and say they're off by 100,000. And now I'm going to go tell my new boss, hey, you just hired me to run your sales team. Let's take the sales revenues down 100,000. You might need to make a case for more sales assets to reach that 100,000. But you've got to get everybody thinking it's attainable and there's buy-in to do it. The first step to any culture is belief that they can connect and deliver what they're being asked to do.
I was just wondering, are there different subsets of culture?
Yes.
To team.
That's right. Yep. So there has to be, in fact, because the responsibilities and the roles and the expectations, for example, we're doing a podcast right here, but this could very well be a sales call where I'm talking to a client who's across the world, and the hours don't line up, and it takes me away from something I'm doing personally or even professionally. That's going to be much different than another department. That doesn't mean one is better or not as good as the other. It just simply means that the rules of performance are different. And if the rules of performance are different, then there has to be different culture. What's really interesting about this question, it was pretty big in the media industry, is actually, there's more of a gravity for employees to want the same culture for everyone, mm-hmm. which is a problem. But it has, and that's why the communication and the conversations have to be clearly defined. As an example, this will date back a little bit. Smoking was, before sales reps and people used to go outside and smoke all the time. And my sales team were heavy smokers at the time. I think most sales teams probably were at one time or another, but they would go out to have a cigarette. And if you listened, they were just talking sales. They were talking mm-hmm. about something that they did, something like that. And so, you know, other departments were, you know, it was like, hey, don't go smoke because you're not being productive at work. And that's mm-hmm. That's a whole other issue. My point is, the impact of those rules are different depending on what your job is. Is it right? Is it wrong? That's for companies to decide, but they need to understand that. I think most clearly you have to have subsets, but more importantly, they have to be known and defined where everybody knows where those subsets are. And you've got to be prepared to defend them. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, this is why we're doing it. You have to explain it. And it's not always easy, but I think empathy is a big skill and that you want to have in your culture. So it's a good exercise on empathy.
Interesting. So what do you see as some of the biggest differences from a sales culture versus the rest of the company?
Well, I feel like I do think that there is an idea in sales culture that's where the revenue is coming in. Let's define it a little bit. This isn't like an e-commerce where it's sales funnel and we're pushing leads through and they're, you know, self-serve portals and acquisition like that. If we're talking about generating, selling, you know, software as a service or something like that, or going out there and selling big ticket deals, there seems to be a little bit of a mentality in sales that, you know, they're the ones bringing in the money. And that's true. But if you just have money, but you don't have human resources policy, the company is going to fail. If you just have money, but you don't have branding and marketing, the company is going to fail. And so we really need to, that's why we really need to look and understand what other people's cultures are to work for. Now, we have the same mission. We have the same objective. That's key. And that starts at your executive leadership teams, your revenue directors, your CFOs, everybody who's leading a team on the executive leadership team. They have to push it all down. It starts at the top and they have to push it out through all the departments, the general culture that we're trying to create. And then internally, they should have freedom on their teams to build the culture that helps them achieve what their department's supposed to achieve while living within the framework of the, you know, country guidelines, I guess, if you will, you know, the bigger cause.
Got it.
But you can't have one blanket culture because that's just naive. And again, you know, not to look at the real world, but you know, one set of rules for one culture doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen it play out. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk about the hiring for culture then, because that's why all of those listeners are here. So, if we are to build a team, and we'll say a sales team for the purpose of this exercise, we're building a team and we're hiring for a cultural fit versus a skills fit. First of all, why don't you think people are doing this already if culture is so important?
Well, you know, because I think it's easier to rely on somebody's book of business. I think it's easier to rely on somebody's references. I think it's easier to rely on what somebody tells you in an interview. Which the point of an interview is to get the best version of yourself. And so this isn't to go into the interview like with a I got to figure out something's not right here. Why is this person looking for a job? That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that there is things that matter more than that. And what I mean by that is if you've got six, and this to me, this, when we talk about culture, it's hiring of the people. This is where it all starts and ends and is successful or has the makings of going downward. When you're hiring, let's say you have a sales team of five people, just for number's sake, and let's say you got one opening. It's not about you finding that one person to complete your sales team. It's about those four other sales reps getting that one person that complete their sales team. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and assuming those four people are a cultural fit. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in this, but for this example, let's assume those four people are a cultural fit. And culture is different today than it will be tomorrow. It has to be. Culture has to evolve. It has to change. There's new circumstances, new personalities, but it's got to be ongoing conversation. It should be a part of your weekly or monthly sales meetings where you're identifying and having somebody responsible for keeping us in check on the company culture, testing the waters and checking the temperature, if you will. It's that important. But for me, when I go in an interview, it doesn't matter if you can set a sales record for the first 90 days. If you're not a cultural fit, you will not last. You'll cause issues beyond that. And so it's the reason why you ask why people don't do it, because the short-term benefits outweigh potentially the risk of the long-term. And hiring people isn't fun. You know, who likes interviewing people and interviewing people? We want to find people. And so we want it to fit. We want to say, well, if I push really hard over here, that puzzle piece actually fits. I think I feel good about this person. I could do it. That's not a knock on the person interviewing them. This is one responsibility they have of everything they do. But the culture is paramount, and you have to get yourself to the mindset that it doesn't matter how good they are, if they don't fit our core beliefs of could be community involvement, could be, anything. It can be outside the walls, inside the walls. We only have disagreements over here. I mean, I don't know what it would be, but whatever those rules are, if they don't fit into that space, you should not hire them. That's why culture is king, because it will not work out. And you won't be able to fix them. And not like there's anything wrong with them. Let me restate that. I sound terrible for saying that. Just because they don't fit your culture doesn't mean they're a bad person. It just means this job isn't right for them. And so it's a disservice you're actually doing to them as well.
So how do you hire or interview for culture?
Well, for me, I ask questions. I ask probing questions about scenarios that are tied to what important elements our culture is. And before we ever hire a person, we always find out from the department heads of the other departments and the team members that this person will be joining to rank the top three cultural fits that's important. Now, again, my job is to drive revenue if I'm the sales director. And so, I've got to have some input into if this person can do it. So it doesn't mean we just stand back and hire who the team feels we should hire, but you need to take that into account. You need to do some of that peer group studying. You need to find out, does a sales rep work well with the marketing department? Marketing might say, listen, this is what's important to us. We're looking for feedback. Are these leads closing? Are they, we just need that open dialogue. And so I would have my homework done, know what's important to the team, leaders of other departments and my staff. And I would build questions around, give me examples of doing this. And you can't say, hey, how do you feel about teamwork? Because they're going to say, oh, I love teamwork. Yeah. You just want to get examples about things like that. It becomes much more of a chore. Like I said, nobody loves interviewing, but you have to go through it. And if you don't do it right, you're going to keep going through it. And so take the time to do the homework. And it's going to feel awkward. It's going to feel a little uncomfortable, which I think is a good thing, because you're not going to say, hey, give me an example of how you met a quota or how often do you meet a quota and so forth. What I want to know is the examples of when, a client maybe called and complained on you, or other employees just felt like you weren't good to work with, or, because you only get one chance to lose a client. You get many chances to gain a client, but you only get one chance to lose one. And so you just really have to evaluate all these things.
And how would you determine, you mentioned one of the things you'll be looking for when hiring is not only somebody that from the sales leader or manager's perspective is there to fill that gap on the team, but also is completing the team for each one of those other people on the team. So in our example, four people on the team, there's space for one more. That person needs to complete the team for each of those four people, not just the manager. Mm-hmm. So how do you determine what type of person will thrive in your culture and will fill that gap effectively?
So there's where some of the why you're getting paid to sit in that chair comes into play. You are going to have to make a gut read on a few things that are going to be, okay, they fit this, they fit that, they've got good references, they know how to sell, they're coachable, they're not coachable, whatever and again, these are things you're basing on a 1 hour conversation. So, keep in mind that you might be off on a few, we're all human. But you're making these initial assessments. And I think at that point, you're going to have to say that, listen, we've all hired people that have tanked that we thought were going to be good. We've all hired people that were like, wow, I thought they had potential, but I had no idea. So there's always going to be a little bit of an unknown and a risk. But if you let the scale side in, they're skewing more to a cultural fit than a sales tenacity fit. That's okay, because I can work with that. I can't teach them to live in our culture, but I can teach them to do things that we have seen proven results for in sales.
Mm-hmm. So then how do you strike that balance between culture and then a set of skills that they definitely need to have to be able, I mean, the ramp period can't be, 6 months, a year before they're able to do the right job. So how do you kind of negotiate the balance between those skills and culture?
Well, so I look at it this way, is I go back to the family and the teams. We can't have, as much as we want it, we're not going to create nirvana. We can't have a, you know, it's got to be a business. We're in a business world. It's a business organization. You know, even the Googles, the Amazons, you know, the Teslas, all the Richard Bransons, all these companies that have these great cultures, they still deliver a bottom line number. They still have to answer to board members, investors, whatever it is. And so I just want to be clear that while we're talking about creating a culture, this doesn't mean that, you know, everybody's got to be happy all the time and so forth. A culture doesn't mean that we're always happy and that everything's always peaceful. It just means we know what the rules are. It just means that we've agreed to function within that space. And we know that if we don't, that there's improvement steps that need to be taken. And so how do you strike a balance? You still need to find people who have the skill sets. All I'm saying is that's not what we're looking for when we start the questioning. If we can find, you know, if we find the skill sets, we get blind to the cultural fits. If we find the cultural fits, we get excited about the skill sets and we're really paying attention. So you have to feed the need for culture first, and then you can get in to the tactical side. And if they're a great cultural fit, but they don't even know how to spell the word sale or wouldn't know how to start a negotiation, you know, it's not a good hire. You're not going to hire them.
Right. So you're go ahead.
Yeah. I think what you're going to say is, and I want to make that clear, is you have two objectives. Are they a cultural fit and can they do the job? We typically look for, can they do the job? And then I will make the culture work. No big deal. We have to find out if they're cultural fit and then can they do the job. That is the better, in my experience, that is the way to approach it. Seems like a little innuendo, but it's a massive little tweak.
Right. And it's much better for the long term. As you mentioned, many companies seem afraid that, you know, 3 month ramp time versus them, as you're saying, being able to bring a book of business that they maybe can already be selling to in the first month. It may seem more appealing to go that route, but maybe losing that person after 3 months to another opportunity or because they don't get along with your people or whatever that might be. The bigger risk is taking somebody who's not a culture fit.
Well, I think so, but I mean, I'm real. Like, I deal with clients who have very small companies, and they'll be like, Eric, listen, I'm expanding into this market. I need 5 sales reps. I don't care if we get 2 to stick. So like I said, nothing's an exact science. What I'm saying is, if you lead with culture first, you'll be better off, whatever your rationale and your reason is. But there's always exceptions to the rule, but you as the leader of that have to hold the line on the culture and give an example of how important it is to you. Mm-hmm. Because if you bring in that, let me go back. If you bring in that 5th person to add the 4th member and they were a complete miss, those 4 people are going to be like, what in the world were they thinking? Now you're starting to lose credibility with your team.
So. Yeah. Makes sense. I want to go back to the idea of these subsets of culture. We talked about sales, of course, having a different subset of culture to other departments, but what about different roles on the sales team itself? Do you see there being sort of slight differences, slight nuance in culture between, say, a prospector versus a closer versus a sales manager?
I think the culture, the expectations of the culture are the same. The roles and the behaviors we allow within that culture are different for that. So again, go to this 5-person sales rep. I think most sales managers or revenue directors would agree that if you've got a sales team, all you're trying to do, you know, you picture like used to be a commercial with 5 clowns, some number of clowns spinning plates on a stick. And all it was frantically trying to keep all the plates spinning. And as a sales director, a revenue manager, when you have all your plates spinning, you feel good. But the next day there's a plate starting to wobble and you got to straighten that one up. But not everybody does the same thing. You know, somebody's a prospector, somebody's a closer, somebody's a relationship seller, and somebody's a value-based seller. And you're working with all of them to make them better and to grow within the culture. But as you're developing people, the rules within the culture, you know, have to be different. And again, I like to take things to the world we're familiar with, you know. Everybody lives by the same rules, 15 to 21 in the United States, I mean, of cultural expectations, but you can't drink alcohol till you're a certain age. So the rules within the culture that eventually you have access to. And so I think that some part of that has to come into your subcultures. But again, these have to be clearly defined. They're only an issue if people didn't know that that was acceptable.
Awesome.
And we don't like to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't like to bring up something that people are going to be, oh, that might make somebody uncomfortable. Well, it's going to be a heck of a lot more uncomfortable if they don't know what's going on. People aren't upset when they know what's going on. They're upset when they feel like that's not what they were told was going on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, yeah, let's get more into the impact then. We chatted about some of the risks of not doing it like this. Of course, you bring on somebody that is not a fit, you lose credibility with the team that you already have. And not only that, but you're now scrambling to fill that seat once again. Like we said at the very beginning, you're checking a task off the list. You're not kind of solving the actual problem if you're not hiring for culture. So what are some of the business impacts if you do hire for culture?
Well, I think you're going to see it translate off to your clients. So we know that people like to do business. Good people like to do business with good people. It's I don't know if it's a law of humanity, but it seems to exist. And so if you're hiring people who understand what your sales culture is, then we know that any sales rep who's taking business out on the street is with our culture, whether that's in alignment with our marketing, our branding, et cetera. And so the benefits, I mean, if any sales rep was any sales manager leader was to look back and say, man, that was a year we really crushed it, outside of, you know, a random sale that came in that was unexpected, et cetera, what you're going to find is you had a group of people who all were, you know, 1 month up and 1 month down, but they were reciprocal of each other. So the team was improving month over month. People were buying into what was going on. There wasn't what I call a culture clutter. You know, a culture clutter is where we're so focused on creating culture that we try to make it, you know, his culture, her culture, my culture, and you haven't really done anything except create 15 versions of culture, and nobody knows which one exists. So, you know, to me, the benefit on the client side is massive because, I mean, you know, if you go to a restaurant and you, you know, want to sit down to get a table and you walk up or the hostess is on their phone and they act like they're bothering you, you know, that's guaranteed. That's not part of the culture that the business wants to have. It's customer experience. And so anytime you're dealing with customer experience, it's good, sales and relationships will increase. If it's bad, sales decrease. I mean, it just has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like an unwritten law, but it's just the way that things work. We have to check ourselves out of the business environment and think about how it feels in personalized human situations, because the answer is always there.
So it really has an impact, not only on kind of it perpetuates culture in a positive way. If you're hiring for culture, it impacts it negatively internally if you're not hiring for culture, but it has this knock-on effect throughout the customer journey. So when they meet you, but even as they kind of move through the sales process and stay on, it sort of impacts sort of your brand and everything. It has a massive impact on every aspect of the business, it seems.
Well, it does. And I'm actually glad you brought that up. I've been kind of swinging at the philosophical level, which is easy to do when it gets into culture without, you know, real tangible examples of companies that you're working with. But, you know, one thing that is, you know, that to me is a steadfast reality is that the companies that put culture into play, the companies that understand that it's something that's important to do, they don't shy away from branding that. I don't think, you know, the ones that are successful, they let their customers know that culture is important to us because people care about that today. You know, this was big 10, 15 years ago, but it's huge right now. Anybody coming into the workforce right now cares about what you do in the community, cares about if you have a green footprint. And you know, whether that's good or bad or indifferent, again, I'll let people in positions when they're hiring people make that decision, but people care about the company they're working for. People care about the culture that they're becoming a part of, that they're going to, you know, spend the time for the good of that company. And so I think you need to, I think you need to put it in your branding. I need your clients, when you have, for a company that's going to reinvent or really start to focus on culture, it needs to be talked about. It needs to be conversational on the sales floor. It needs to be questions in the sales meeting. Hey, how did that fit in culturally with what we're trying to do? And again, we're not saying culturally like, you know, Tommy and Sally play well together. We're saying we're trying to do some serious business here. We're trying to make a market impact. We're trying to grow our business or you know, or take market share from them. And we're not going to do that just by letting everybody run around. We're only going to do that if we're 100% clear on what our vision and culture is. Can I just ask, Sarah, where you grew up or where you're at?
Yeah.
I'm gonna get to an analogy with this. So
sure. Yeah, I grew up in a small town in British Columbia, but now I'm in Vancouver, also in British Columbia.
Okay. So listen, I'm sorry. I lived in Detroit for a while. Hockey's big. I'm not going hockey because, you know, you're mentioning Canada here. But what I'll say to that is there's certain teams that win all the time, and not because their athletes are better, but because when they walk into a locker room or when they put on a jersey or when they're associated with that team or organization, the expectations and culture is clear. And so they something happens in that environment where failure and success, you know, failure is not an option. Success is very important. And I'm not saying turn your company into a locker room. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is when people work for your company, they need to know before they work there that that company has a winning culture. They care about culture. That's really the most important statement. They might not know if it's a great culture, but they need to know that that company cares about culture. They want to win, but to win their customers, their employees, et cetera. And it might sound, again, a little Nirvana-ish for a lot of people if they've been in business for 30 years, but it's the way to do business now more than ever.
Interesting. Yeah, you can definitely see that shift happening in the companies that are kind of, whether it's getting like mainstream airtime or something, like the glitz and the glamour of old school sales doesn't seem to have the same appeal as you're saying, a company that takes care of people in its community or has a green footprint or whatever this sort of focus outside of just the revenue numbers seems to be. You can see that all over the place, that people would rather work for companies like that these days. Culture seems to be gaining on money in terms of why people want to work for one company over another. I've seen that even hiring candidates myself for SDR positions at Predictable Revenue. People say like, I value a company with values like my own over a paycheck, which is maybe indicative of everybody becoming a little bit more wealthy and able, you know, whole to be able to make that decision. But it's pretty interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, full transparency. For me, three kids, I'm married. There's certain things we like to do. Money's important to me. Mm-hmm. Making it fairly and with a quality product and service is important to me. But it's not as paramount to people entering, and it might change, but we just have to be aware of that. Because if we're going to compete and win with that talent pool, then, and I actually like that about the generation coming in, because to me, they have a global view of what's going on. And so anytime you do that, they're going to be talking to decision makers in that space and et cetera. So it's hard to look at and say, you know what, we got to make a change, or do we have a winning culture? Do we have a mean want to stay with us for 5 to 10 years? Are we a place that you can grow professionally and improve the quality of your family? And if your company isn't, there's some transition companies, but if the answer to those are supposed to be yes, you better go out and find out if those are yeses within the walls, because if they're not, you've got a culture issue. And here's the good news: a culture issue isn't difficult to fix. It's evolving every day. People just need to know that it matters to you, and they'll give you a lot of loyalty.
Awesome. Well, I think that's an incredible place to wrap up. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise on culture. As we're saying, it's incredibly important and timely right now. So you guys listening, take stock. As you mentioned, each week, each month, whatever that might look like for you, have a stop and a look around and make sure that you are living up to that culture that you've set out for yourself. And if it needs to change, if it needs to evolve, let it, but make sure it's strong and make sure when you are bringing somebody onto the team, you're bringing somebody on who's going to be a fit for that first and foremost. Eric, if people want to learn more from you, where can they get in touch with you?
Well, yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, obviously, like everybody else. But readfivegroup.com, you know, you can drop me a note there or something. You know, I spend a lot of time. I really like the academia side of things. I like talking. I like talking philosophy on what ifs and possibilities. I'll just say this. You know, creating a culture isn't something you got to go out and pay something to do. You got to put in the effort and research it. There's plenty of stuff out there, a lot of great speakers on this, a lot of great just information on this, but it's something you should totally try to do on your own. You don't have to go out and pay thousands of dollars for somebody to come in and create a culture, because that will miss too, because what we know is you have to create the culture. But any questions around it, or want to know some, you know, people that who might be able to share some insights on it, et cetera, or you just have some questions for me, you can reach me at readfivegroup.com, and there's a way to contact me on the website. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Eric, for coming on the show. And thank you to all of you guys for checking out another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We'll catch you next time.